Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we speak with writers about writing. And this is the very first episode of our third year, which I'm really, really love. So welcome to my guest, one of my dearest friends, Edwin Hill. Hi, Edwin.
Hi, Sean. Thanks so much for having me on today.
I can't believe I haven't had you on before now. It's so great to have you. You're a wonderful writer. I love all of your books, as you know, and I would have liked them anyway. Even if we weren't friends, but I'm so glad that we're friends too.
Me too.
Right, I'm going to introduce Edwin for the five people that haven't heard of you. He was born in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Duxbury, right? That's how you say Duxbury.
Yeah, Duxbury.
Yeah, or do you say Duxbury? You guys say stuff differently there.
Yep.
Right, from that place in Massachusetts, and spent most of his childhood obsessing over the Famous Five, Agatha Christie, and somehow finding a way to C.S. Lewis's wardrobe. His parents were fond of taking his sister and him on month-long family camping trips across the US and Canada. One of his best memories is of finishing a copy of The Seven Dials Mystery while the rest of the family visited Mount Rushmore. I love that. I had to keep that in. It was pretty fun. This says a lot about my friend. Growing up, when VHS tapes were new, meant that watching Alien, Jaws, The Shining, or Halloween whenever he wanted seemed luxurious. Still does today. Like his main character in his series, Hester Thursby, he watched all those movies and others like them a lot. And I love all those movies too. I don't think I'm as much of a horror fan as you are, but all those ones are favorites of mine. After attending Wesleyan University and graduating with a BA in American Studies, he headed west, San Francisco, for the dot-com boom. Not bust, hopefully, boom. Later, he returned to Boston, earned an MFA from Emerson, and switched gears to work in educational publishing. He served as the vice president and editorial director for Bedford slash St. Martin's, a division of Macmillan Learning, for many years before turning to writing full time. He lives in Roslindale, Massachusetts, with his partner Michael, and his favorite reviewer, I said retriever, reviewer, their lab, Edith Ann, who likes his first drafts enough to eat them. And Edith Ann is insta famous. So we love Edith Ann. We have to include her, even though I don't always put the dogs in the interest, but Edith Ann is important.
Oh yeah, she's on Instagram at Edith Ann Lab at Edith Ann Lab.
Yes, and that girl has a lot of fun. She goes to the park, she goes water diving, she does she's always having fun and
She
stuff.
likes to go outside.
Yes, she does. Well, that's it's good. Keeps she you know, that keeps the owners active too. It's nice to have a companion when you're going out and walking. I mean, I walk my dog in the morning, and it's a special time. I really enjoy it. So it's good to have that.
Favorite time of the day.
Yeah. So you've written a lot of books, and they've all been great. But today we're here to talk about your most recent, which is called Who to Believe, correct?
Yes.
Can you? I believe you. I believe that you, this is correct. Okay. Tell us about Who to Believe.
Sure. So this book is set in a small coastal town in Massachusetts. It's a fictional town, but it's sort of an amalgam of three towns in this area. And it starts out when local restaurateur Laurel Thibodeau is murdered and asphyxiated in her own home. And suspicion immediately falls on her husband, Simon. He has gambling debts and recently took out a large life insurance policy on his wife. And he also has a rock solid alibi. But in this tiny town, this tiny co coastal town, everyone has an opinion on what might have happened. And when a group of friends celebrate one of their birthdays, each of them has their own take on the story. I'm not giving anything away when I say one of these people will not make it through to the end of this evening. So these six friends come together to have a birthday party, and the interesting thing that I did with this novel is I told this story sort of Rashomon style, which means that I tell it I tell the story through each point of view in total. So the first person we visit with is a psychiatrist named Farley Drake. He has a nasty habit of getting too close to his clients. And so we sort of see what happens at the birthday party through his point of view for the first sixth of the novel. Then for the second sixth of the novel, we jump into the birthday girl's head. Her name is Alice Stone. She's turning 40 and she's a financial planner. So she has sort of a unique view into people's lives because she sees their finances. She also she's married to a man named Damien, and she also has a very clear-eyed view of him and his extracurricular activities, especially with other women. So we kind of go through the story six different times, and we see it from each point of view. I was inspired by Rashomon, which is a Japanese movie that came out in the 50s. It's directed by Akira Kurosawa. I was also inspired by a TV show called The Affair, which I really like. That was on, I think, about 10 years ago. And on that show, you would, especially early on in the series, each episode would be split in two. And the story was about a man and a woman having an affair. And so the first half of the episode would be from his point of view. And the second half of the episode would be from her point of view. And you'd sort of see their interpretation of events and how they were different.
Yeah. And that's sort of like the title, you know, because it reminds me, you know, because Who to Believe, and it seems so, you know, relevant to our time today. I mean, I'm sure it's relevant to every time, but we are in this time period of life now where it's like, well, who do you believe? Like, who, everyone thinks that they're telling the truth, and, you know, and it's just so convoluted sometimes because your truth is not matching up to the real truth or our truth, or what is the real truth? So that's why Who to Believe is such a cool title. I love that title.
Oh, it's very— Thank you. I love the idea of perspective and what, how people bring different perspective to everything. So think about a fight that you have with a friend, and like you, how you feel about whatever the fight might be, whether, you know, whether it's something personal or whether it's over politics or whatever. And like your perspective is that you are the good guy. You're the one who's speaking the truth, right? And then think about that friend that you're having the fight with and how their perspective completely changes and how they become the hero of the story. And so doing that six times over was really, it was fun and it was really interesting to do.
Absolutely. It's like a math problem. And then, you know, and then you think about the surrounding friends and the version they've been told and then colored by their own perception. So then the story gets like, it's like a web. So it's very cool. Why you wanted to take this on, I have no idea. It seems hard. All right, well, first official question. What was the initial inspiration for writing this story? And how long did it take you to write this cobweb? How long, what was the initial spark? And then how long did it take you to compile this bridge here?
Well, I've always really liked this structure of storytelling. I really love I love logic. And I love looking at how the pieces of a puzzle within a mystery sort of fall together. And I love the idea of, as I was saying, perspective and what each individual person brings to a conversation and how those perspectives can change. I guess the real inspiration for this story was that in my last book, which is called The Secrets We Share, that one took me a little while to write. And there was a character in that who was a psychiatrist who spied on his clients, who didn't make the final cut of the novel. I wound up giving him the axe. But I liked the idea of that. I thought it'd be so fun to take that character. That novel takes place in Boston, but I thought, let's take that character and move him to a much smaller community where anyone, when you have sort of a public job, like a psychiatrist, or a personal job, something where you're actually inserting yourselves into other people's lives and you live in a small community, like your personal life and your professional life are going to overlap in certain ways because there just aren't that many people for that not to happen. And so that's really what I wanted to look at. And then I thought, let's make him a little more evil than just like someone who's struggling to maintain a personal and professional life. Let's have some pathology behind this. And so I took it from there. When I was growing up, my dad was the principal of my high school. So, and I lived in a town that's very similar to the one in this story. And it was an interesting experience in retrospect. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't know that it was anything different than what it was. But when I look back on it, I look at my father and the way he sort of managed this the situation of both being part of the community, like we lived in the community, we had friends, we did whatever, but he also had this role where he was sort of sitting above the community and kind of he knew, I'm sure he hasn't shared any of these things with me, but I'm sure he knew secrets about certain people in town, and he knew he sort of oversaw the youth of this entire town. And so I kind of wanted to explore what that would be like. So each of the six characters in the novel has a job where they sort of see something in a different way. So we have the psychiatrist, we have the financial advisor, we have a police chief, we have a minister, and we also have a auto mechanic. So each of them sort of engages with the community in certain ways that, you know, Joe Schmo, who drives to Boston every day, wouldn't necessarily do.
Yeah, and it's I loved when I moved, because I went to high school for the last couple of years in a very small town, where everyone was related to each other apparently, and we were transplants, and then I could not wait to get out of there because it's like everyone knew everything about everybody, and it was very confining. And then I moved to New York City, and I was like, I can do whatever I want here. We're never gonna see me again. These people, this person is never gonna see me again. They won't comment to my mom or the person at church or whatever it is. And it's like, yeah, I get it. It's confining and it's suffocating. And that's it's also a nice sense of community to live in a small town. Yeah, good and bad.
Two sides of the same coin, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You feel welcomed and comforted sometimes, or judged all the time. So, what is the writing experience like when working on a standalone versus your series novels? Is it different for you, or how long, what's going on with the series? Like, is it harder, easier? What?
It's different. So I write a series with the Hester Thursby series. It's about a Harvard librarian who sort of solves crime on the side with her police partner, Angela White. And that's three books in. And, you know, with a series, you write a series, John, so you know this. You have to sort of plan out some story arcs that go over three or four novels so that you sort of have something that you're working toward. And then you kind of have to work on bringing those to a close so that there are entry points for new readers. So what I love about working on a series is you get to stay with your characters for a little bit longer. You get to see them grow over a few books. And it's like a TV series, though, because like in a TV series, everything in a TV series is middle, right? Because you're always trying to get your viewers to keep writing or keep reading, keep watching, I guess, on a TV series. So you want to get your readers to keep reading. And there are a couple of things that hem you in with a series. You can't, in a series, you know, unless you're going to do something super bold like they did on Game of Thrones, you really have to protect your core cast. And so, you know, there are probably five people in the Hester Thursby series who I protect, and I have to make sure that they remain likable and that readers are going to want to keep coming back and seeing them. So that's also challenging, because when you go to write, everyone knows that Hester Thursby is not going to get killed off in the Hester Thursby series. And probably these other characters aren't as well. So what I love about the standalones is that you can just kind of do whatever you want. I mean, anyone can be good. Anyone can be bad. Another challenge of the series books is, like, when you write a standalone novel, you are writing about the most important thing that ever happened to these people in their entire lives. And so you can really pile on the tension. You can really make that central conflict as big as you want to. When you write a series, one of the challenges is you're not necessarily writing about the most important thing that ever happened to this character in their entire lives, because that may have happened in another book that you've already written. So you're constantly trying to build up what has happened with these characters. So, but that can be fun too, because it's always challenging to come up with that next thing that Hester's going to face.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you also have to temper it with, like, well, how many bad things could happen to this?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, this is also another murder. Okay, good. No, I get it. It is a challenge to keep that system that, and you write it, you don't write super traditional. So, you know, your books are edgier and a little leaning towards psychological thriller. I mean, they're all wonderful. So, well, good. Well, thanks. You did a good job answering that one, as I knew you would. So this book, I've talked to friends about your book. I loved it. And I've talked to other people who loved it. And all of us were saying it's very twisty. Your other books are twisty too, but this one seems to take that to a next level. So The Art of the Twist. How do you construct a twist from a writing perspective? So do you plan these out? Do they just kind of come to you? How far in advance do you plan on and don't give anything away, obviously, but like twisting, how do you get to that point? How can we do this? Tell me how to do it.
So this book was really unique because of the structure. So it was like, it was different than what I would normally do. Normally I would use it. I just use a 3X structure, like a standard 3X structure where you have plot points. You have an inciting incident that sort of gets the story going. You have a plot point one, which happens, you know, about a third of the way through the book. You have a midpoint where things often shift at the midpoint where you think the novel is about one thing and then all of a sudden it's about another thing. You have another plot point too, which is about two thirds of the way through the book, and then you have a climax. So that's what I normally do when I'm plotting out. And if you think about your plot points, they are the things that are really big and important in a novel. With my students, the example I always give is from the movie version of The Wizard of Oz. The midpoint of The Wizard of Oz is when Dorothy arrives at the Emerald City, and she finds out that the story is no longer about her traveling to the Emerald City and being sent home by the Wizard of Oz. She finds out that the story is now about her having to go get the broomstick from the Wicked Witch of the West. So what we thought the novel was about her finding the wizard and going home, and now it's about something completely different. So that's what a plot point is. With this novel, what I did was I treated each of the six, there are six large sections, then one small one at the end, but each of the large sections, each of them is about a third of the novel. I mean, about a sixth of the novel. I treated each one like it was a mini novel. So I gave each of the sections two plot points, a midpoint, and an inciting incident. So I had a lot of, that wound up creating a lot of tension and a lot of twists in the novel. There are a few things that sort of came, with this book, I definitely knew who did it from the start. There were a couple of decisions that I was wrestling with, like whether or not someone would do something or whatever. I don't want to give too much away. But the fun thing that I like with writing is when certain objects or certain pieces of the story all of a sudden come together and they have more meaning. So for example, without giving too much, there is a birthday cake in this novel. And the birthday cake winds up having not a huge piece of the plot, but the birthday cake, if you watch it as you're reading the novel, it changes meaning as the novel progresses, and it means something different to not each of the characters, but many of the characters. And so that was sort of fun, and I didn't plan that. It was a birthday party, so there was a birthday cake. And as I was writing, the birthday cake sort of started taking on more and more meaning until at some point I was like, oh my God, I've shifted this enough that it actually has the birthday cake almost has to have a resolution as a, it's not a character, but it's an object, but the birthday cake has to have a resolution in some way, because I've made it too much of a big deal. So then I really had to think through, like, what is the resolution for the birthday cake? And that was super fun when I figured that out. There are a couple of other objects that are important in the novel. And like one of them, I don't even want to say what it is. One of them, I knew it was important from the beginning, and each character sort of interacts with this object. And it was fun to see how it sort of shifted and changed as the novel progressed. And I always had to know that was the hardest thing about this novel. Sorry, I feel like I'm speaking very vaguely, but this object that I'm talking about, this mysterious object that I don't want to mention, the hardest thing was always remembering where it was in the story, because it was so important to how the story, the resolution of the story. I don't think I gave away too much there, did I?
No, you're fine. It's intriguing. So now everyone's going to go, they want to know what the object is. They haven't read the book yet. They're going to go grab it. Well, you're very intellectual and thoughtful writer. I know that. I've known that since your first book. I mean, you're not just dashing things off. you construct, as you were saying, you construct stories, and you know, you're very, very good at what you do. I mean, I'm a fan.
Thank you.
I'm a fan. They're fun. They're also thrilling and exciting, and I can't stop. I want to hear what's going on with everybody. And I miss your characters when I finish the books. And I think that's the sign of a really good writer. It's when I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're up to. I'm like, they're a character in a book. They're just doing whatever. They're a character. They're not a person. But that's a gift that you have.
Thank you.
So, Speaking of all your different characters, hopefully this is an easier question to navigate because you don't want to. It's and I talked to other thriller, domestic suspense people on the show, and it's like, tell us about your book and don't give anything away. Good luck with that, because it makes the interviews a little stilted here and there. But so, speaking of your characters, what was it like to shift into those different mindsets, POV kind of things? And did you have a favorite character that you enjoyed writing more than any of the others, or not?
Oh, sure. That's such an interesting question. So again, there are seven POV characters in this novel, which was challenging because they had to be distinct from each other. So, and I think I was successful at that. Readers will have to decide for themselves. The first character is this guy named Farley Drake, who's the psychiatrist. I really did enjoy writing him. You know, like if I were to relive my life, I think I wouldn't mind being a psychologist or a psychiatrist in some way. And so it's always fun to, like, as a writer, it's always fun to explore a career that, you know, maybe you didn't do in your life, but you considered doing. He's really interesting. And I had fun writing him because he is a huge narcissist. He is very, very good looking, or at least he thinks he's very, very good looking. At least he presents that way. And so it was sort of fun to write him because he's one of those people that's so good looking that like he never has to wait for a reservation at a restaurant or something like that. So that's always fun to like, it's fun to sort of imagine that. I suppose the character that I really enjoyed writing the most was Farley has a partner named Richard. And he is a mechanic, and he's not as dumb as you might assume. And it was fun to sort of see him. He definitely comes across in a very specific way when other characters are talking about him for the first half of the novel. And then I think his character was the most fun to sort of show the world through his perspective and show how much people were missing about him and that he was had a little more depth to him than people gave him credit for. So that was super fun to write.
Yeah, that sounds good. I love just hearing about how you guys, you know, the craft of it, like how you get this to happen. I mean, it's fascinating to me. That's what we just really focus on, the writing piece of the work here. So you've done a lot of things. You've been around for a while now. You've been on the other side of publishing, which is always fascinating. If you could tell, you're having some great success. If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be? Or what advice would you give to someone sitting down for their first time writing a book?
Oh, gosh. You know, I would say, so a couple things for someone who's writing, myself, I would even tell myself this. Like, have confidence in yourself. Like, writing is a long process. It's a messy process and you just kind of have to stick at it every day. Some days, like today, I got up, I had to write 1,000 words today for my current novel. And I was like, I sat down and I thought, this is not going to be a good day, but you have to write the 1,000 words anyway, because then you'll have them. And there are certain days that are like that. And I, you know, I finished the 1,000 words and I'm probably going to have to revise them. I know for a fact I'll have to revise them, but I have them. And that's great. The other piece of advice that I would give anyone who's writing is finish your novel, make it as good as you possibly can, because that's the only thing you have control over. And then as you begin the sales process, publishing is all about hurry up and wait. And so as you begin the sales process, as you look for an agent, as you look for a publisher, or whatever path you decide to take with your writing, keep writing, write something else, because you know what, you just wrote a novel and you learned a lot writing that novel. Now write another one and take everything that you learned from writing the first one and put it into that second one. It'll be better than the first one.
That's great advice. And yeah, keep moving forward like a shark. You got to keep moving forward or you die.
Yep. That's exactly right.
You will sink to the bottom and not, it's just, it's hard. It's like an object of motion stays in motion. That's what I always tell myself. So if it's like, you know, it's hard to pick up and start again. So just keep going. Even if it's terrible, keep going. I have a t-shirt that says that when I was running. It's terrible. This is terrible. Let's just keep going.
Yep.
All right. We're reviving the quiz for season 3. I had a rapid fire quiz and we've made it a little more tailored to, it's just different. It's just a different
okay.
thing. Okay. Rapid fire quiz. There are no correct answers. Question 1. Do you there are whatever you want them to be. I'll read a lot into it. We prefer reading standalone novels or series.
Standalone.
Yeah, cool. It's good to know. I mean, you know, there's gray areas, but these are just like instinct. Okay. Number two, do you prefer reading books set in contemporary times or historical?
Contemporary.
Me too. Three, do you prefer to write in the mornings or evenings?
Mornings.
Okay. You're good at this. You're good at quizzes. Number four, would you rather watch a movie or a TV show?
TV show.
Okay.
That
Interesting.
has changed, by the way.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
TV's so much better now. TV used to
TV,
be.
I feel like TV is way better, and I feel like TV is better in general. TV is better than movies now.
Yeah. It used to be the flip. And I would go, now I look at like what's playing sometimes. I'm like, I don't see any of this, you know, and I'm, but TV, I make like, I'm such a nerd. I make lists in like Google Notes. So people will talk about a show. I'm like, oh, I definitely want to see that. And now my list is huge. And how am I ever going to get to those? Oh, well, I will eventually. Good, good answers. Good answers. Last one. If you could have dinner with any author, living or dead, who would it be?
Well, it would be Sean Riley Simmons, but let me think of someone else. I would really love to have dinner with, I really like Kate Atkinson's book, so I'm going to choose her. I'd probably be super intimidated and would just laugh the entire time. So she'd probably be like, so glad that she survived dinner with me. But anyway, I would love to talk with her, and I'd love to talk with her about her process.
I think that would be a good, you'd be fine. You're always wonderful at dinner. We're going to have dinner soon. We'll be good. We'll be good. We always have dinner. You and I. Well, it's been, oh, wait. So when is the book coming out? What's going on with you next? What's happening?
So
on
Who to
tour?
Believe comes out on January 23rd. So in 2 weeks. And I will be in Boston. I'll do a couple events in Boston. I'm coming down to New York for the Mysterious Bookshop on the 1st of February. I have a couple events in Connecticut. And then some things online. You can find out all of my stuff at edwin-hill.com or follow me on online social. I'm not a big social media person, but I do have accounts under Edwin Hill Author.
Yeah, Edwin will pop up every few months or something. Like, hey guys, everybody's still having fun at this party. I'm just... Where is everybody? Well, it's because you're writing, and that's what you got to be doing. Like, sometimes I'm on there, I'm like, how are these people writing these books? Like, they're on there all day.
I'm amazed.
Yeah, I think it's smart to prioritize your time and protect your sanity and write. I mean, that's what we're here for. But yeah, you're funny, and you pop up once in a while. I'm like, oh, there he is. I always know you're fine. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for being my first guest of the year. I adore you and your books, and I want everyone to run out and get all of them, but you could start with Who to Believe. And you could start from the now and go back if you haven't, but all of them are amazing. And I just can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
Bye, everyone.